Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Texas Democrat and House Ag Committee member Jasmine Crockett, who joins us to talk about her work on the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Producers are feeling better about the farm economy despite concerns about interest rates. According to the latest Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group, about 17% of farmers say they are doing better financially than this time 1 year ago. But nearly two-thirds expect interest rates to rise in the next year. Higher input costs were the top concern for producers, followed by those increasing interest rates and lower farm gate prices for their commodities. In other news, USDA announced $250 million in grants to help local communities plan for wildfires. The department will cap grants for developing and updating community wildfire protection plans at $250,000, while grants for associated wildfire resilience projects are capped at $10 million. This is the second year of the program. Earlier this year, USDA awarded nearly $200 million to help states and tribes prepare for wildfire season. And finally, Capitol Hill is on its August recess, but the House Ag Committee hit the road for a pair of listening sessions. A bipartisan group of members gathered Monday in Maine, then another contingent got together Wednesday in Minnesota. House Ag Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson said the events were the 50th and 51st feedback sessions for the committee during the current Farm Bill cycle. For members of the committee, it's a chance to learn more about the issues on the minds of constituents. Farm Bill feedback is especially critical this time around, as more than 70% of the committee membership is working on their first reauthorization. One of those Farm Bill rookies is Jasmine Crockett, a Democrat representing an urban district in Dallas, Texas. She says she has big goals for her first Farm Bill as a member of Congress.
As a Texan, number one, I got to make sure that those that are producing the food in the state of Texas, that they are able to do their jobs. We know that we've heard a lot of stories about their struggles as relates to access to water and the extreme climate conditions. In addition to that, I want to make sure that we protect SNAP benefits. And finally, I want to make sure that those that are living in food deserts have access to fresh and fresh foods.
You mentioned SNAP being one of your Farm Bill priorities, and we've seen quite a bit of discussion on SNAP and nutrition policy generally already this summer with the passage of the debt ceiling deal, some language in there, including some changes, and time will tell if House Republicans or the CBO is right in terms of whether that increases or decreases enrollment. But some folks are still kicking around the idea of maybe looking for additional efficiencies, potentially some cost savings within that program. I say all that to ask you, can a Farm Bill that includes some cost savings within the nutrition title still be passed with bipartisan support, in your opinion?
Absolutely not. I don't think that it benefits anyone if we start cutting SNAP benefits and the access to SNAP. What most people don't recognize is that it's an ecosystem. Our producers need to make sure that they are able to anticipate how much money is going to be out there as they are planting. In addition to that, we know that our grocery stores, they need to anticipate what is their revenue going to look like? So it's not just those recipients, it's everyone that's a part of that ecosystem. And so I think that there will be pushback, not just from those of us that care about the recipients that honestly need to just eat, but also those that are farming, also those that are ranching, also those that are selling these foods.
You also talked about food stamps. I want to circle back to that because a lot of times, folks hear the concept of a food desert and they imagine a very rural community, maybe an hour's drive to the nearest grocery store. But you've been very outspoken about the existence of some of these food deserts in urban and suburban areas. What do you think is the role of the federal government in addressing the existence of these food deserts and helping people that might live in them?
Absolutely. So we are currently in the process of working on a bill that would allow for co-ops to actually access capital so that if it's a for-profit organization that they are trying to rely on, some big grocery store chain to come in that's not coming, they can still have access to fresh foods. And that's what we need to do. You know, no one should go hungry in this country. No one should say, I don't know how I'm going to access food. And honestly, we can bring down our overall costs of healthcare if we just make sure that people have better access.
For those that might not be as familiar with the issue and maybe live, you know, grew up in rural America or more experienced with that, they think, well, gosh, you know, in a city, you're so close to everything. There's, you know, so many options all around. How does that definition of food deserts, that rural-centric definition, based on experiences within your district and other places that you've traveled, how does that rural-centric definition maybe miss the mark?
The majority of people that are in rural America, they actually have access, say, to a vehicle. And so they're able to drive. And so what is far in rural America is not necessarily the same definition in urban America, where we have a lot of people that actually are not accessing vehicles. And so what happens is for them, it's a matter of, can I walk to a grocery store? Can I catch a bus to the grocery store? And a lot of times that's not a reality without, say, having to grab a couple of buses to get to that grocery store. So this is all about making sure that we have access to the foods. And unfortunately, people don't understand that in inner city urban America, a lot of times, specifically my kiddos, are actually eating whatever is at the local convenience store or the local gas station, which is so problematic. They're not getting nutritious foods. They're getting the junk food, the things that are not allowing them to develop the way that they should be able to develop and learn the way that they need to learn in school.
We'll talk Farm Bill Learning Curve with Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Texas Democrat Jasmine Crockett is one of many members of Congress working on their first farm bill. She says learning the intricacies of the legislation is a challenge she has enjoyed.
I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and it was not on a farm. So a lot to learn. But listen, I live in the state of Texas. It's something that absolutely means the world to the state of Texas. We do everything bigger in the state of Texas, and that includes agriculture. And so, first of all, most people may think that the Farm Bill is only about food, and that could not be further from the truth. It's about so much more. As someone who has a large area that deals with aviation, I've got Southwest Airlines, and then I've got American Airlines right down the street. And so I've had to have a lot of conversations around sustainable aviation fuels. In addition to that, we've had an opportunity to have listening sessions. And so I've been able to learn about what those that are farming and dealing with sugar go through.
So I got to ask, you're in a good company in terms of folks working on their first farm bill, a lot of folks learning the nuances of ag and food policy right now, as you also work on everything else that's on your plate as a member of Congress. So for groups that are maybe looking to educate or maybe interact with new members in terms of their priorities for this farm bill and what they're hoping to see out of it, if you could offer them any piece of advice, what would that be? What's the best way to reach and to inform you and your colleagues on this?
I would say definitely get with our LEG staff and make sure that you're informing them of the things that make sense and hopefully will produce a strong farm bill that can get passed in a bipartisan way. And I'll be honest, I'm not as concerned about a clean bill coming out of committee as I am a clean bill being able to get past the finish line on the floor.
Well, you say concerned about what might happen on the floor. There's also, of course, the other chamber that will have something to say about what the ultimate farm bill might look like, as will the president that signs that piece of legislation.
Absolutely.
So what are you thinking will be the final product here? I know you don't have a crystal ball, and so it would be irresponsible of me to ask you to stare into one. But as you think about the concerns that you have expressed there about the floor floor product of the Farm Bill. How do you think the current politics in the House of Representatives could eventually shape the final piece of legislation that we'll see eventually sent to President Biden's desk?
I do know that we have informed our chairman, who does listen to the minority as well, of our concerns. And so I know that he is also concerned. And so I think that it comes down to what leadership does from the committees and how hard they work. And so I am hopeful that our farmers, our producers, our ranchers are really stressing to both sides of the aisle how important it is for us to get a bill passed. And that looks like a clean bill. And so hopefully they are listening and they're ready to get to work. As far as the Senate is concerned, I'm not as concerned about the Senate. The Senate seems to be working a lot better than the House this session overall. And if we get to the House floor and there's problems, obviously there will be a conference committee. And then it comes down to, are we appointing bomb throwers to the conference committee, or are we appointing sound members that really want to get this done?
Very good. Well, Congresswoman Crockett, we appreciate your time. We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pagel has a look at a possible Farm Bill change in this week's Snap It Out.
Base acres are used to determine farm program payments. In theory, the system keeps farmers planting for the market rather than a government check by using previous acreage decisions. The current base was set in the 2002 Farm Bill, and some organizations want to reflect changes in planting decisions since then, mainly more corn and soybean acreage and less wheat, cotton, and rice. This map shows how each state would be impacted by a mandatory base update over the next 10 years, based on an analysis from the Senate Ag Committee's Republican staff. 34 states could lose a combined total of $3 billion. California's $457 million decrease would be the biggest drop. Louisiana and Arkansas would both drop more than $300 million, and Mississippi and Alabama would be looking at a $271 million hit. On the other hand, 16 states would gain $1.1 billion collectively, with the biggest increases coming in Kansas and North Dakota, which would both gain more than $250 million. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to have a little Farm Bill educational session as we look behind the scenes of the process of educating some of the members who are drafting and developing that legislation every 5 years or so, as we've discussed on this program. Joined by Leslie Weber McNitt with the Eleanor Crook Foundation and Joel Leftwich with the Kansas Farm Bureau. But before their current employers, both of these folks spent time working on Capitol Hill for the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, and appreciate both of them for joining us. And Leslie, I want to go to you first, because I'm hoping you might be able to take us kind of behind the scenes. In early January, we get new members of Congress. What does the initial kind of conversations look like when you're walking through, this is the Farm Bill, this is the politics of the Farm Bill, this is the policies of the Farm Bill with a new member of Congress?
I had the pleasure of working on the House Agriculture Committee during the pandemic. So it might have looked a little bit different for us than it has in the past and than it did in Joel's experience, because we did a lot of work by Zoom. But it's really important to make sure that members are up to speed, and there's a lot that they have to learn to be ready to really dive in on a farm bill. There's a lot of work to do, not just on policy, but making sure that members are learning procedure, that they're getting to know national level stakeholders. A lot of times new members are familiar with the food and agriculture concerns in their own districts and the stakeholders who are really engaged in their own districts, But then how you reconcile those regional or even district level concerns at a national level in a you know federal process is a different science.
Leslie, you mentioned some of those initial conversations with members that take place. When you are in those early conversations, what are some of the biggest misconceptions you found yourself addressing and perhaps correcting in some of those initial dialogues?
In terms of misperceptions, you know, I mentioned the importance of kind of getting to understand the regional or different, you know, state to state differences in perspective and interests in the farm bill. And I think that sometimes, you know, members would come to Washington and assume that this is that the farm bill, debates break down along party lines, but often it's actually, you know, different regional needs, right? You certainly have members from urban and rural districts alike that have people receiving SNAP or WIC. And so how you put all of that together at a federal level often has more to do with geography than it does with political party affiliation. So I think that's a big misconception. And then just, again, understanding the breadth of how many programs and how many policy issues are within a farm bill.
So, Joel, let's take things over to the Senate side of Capitol Hill, as that's your area of expertise and experience. And many times we'll see folks get elected to the Senate. Maybe they have House experience. Also, just by nature of the size of the two chambers, there's fewer folks there necessarily to interact with. And so I guess I say all that to ask you, in the initial education process, does that allow staff to maybe get a little bit more in the weeds with some of these folks based on their previous experience or based on the smaller number of new members that they're interacting with?
When you're talking about members who were in the House and now over in the Senate, you know, depending on where they're from, you know, they may not have had a farmer in their district. And now that they're in the Senate, they do. And vice versa. You could have had someone from the Big First in Kansas who now has to represent more urban areas in Wichita and the surrounding Kansas City area. And so you do have a bit of that continuing education process to let them know what the larger state's interests are. From the perspective of a committee staff or the Ag Committee on the Senate side, you know, we wanted to make sure that we provided as many resources as was needed, whether they were members of the Ag Committee or not. Not too many folks like to be educated by other staffers, but they like to help. They like it when we facilitate information for them. So whether that's bringing in CRS to do kind of staff level briefings or bringing in USDA career staff to offer bipartisan briefings and updates on individual titles as we prepare to go into the farm bill discussions. Those were all things that we would try to do, to help provide as much information to those members as they needed.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. With so many new members and staff coming to town each time a new Congress gavels in, former Senate Ag staffer Joel Leftwich says some of the tried and true methods of getting folks up to speed are still the way to go.
I thought it was most successful when folks would create space for multiple staff who maybe don't have as much familiarity with the Farm Bill or USDA programs to get together and ask maybe some to ask questions in a bit of a safer space without having to have, you know, the professional committee staff who, you know, have spent years working on those policies, who know it very well, just provide maybe a less intimidating space for those newer staff and newer offices to ask questions that they may not want to ask in front of a more experienced, their more experienced colleagues.
Well, and Joel, we of course know that a new farm bill is going to be written at some point here before too long. Congress is going to need to get to work on that. And I guess take us inside the rooms on there from maybe a staff level. Just how many all-nighters do committee staff have in their future as they try and finalize a new piece of legislation?
I remember in the 2008 farm bill, you know, and we weren't, you know, we were just a member of the committee, staying up all night working on amendments, working with Senator Chambliss's staff and working with other members and their staff. And that night before markup, I slept in the office floor for 90 minutes while we were getting amendments printed. And that was it. And, you know, you look back at it now and you're like, man, that was a lot of fun. You know, for committee staff going into markup and even going into the floor, that's a hectic time. There's a lot happening.
Leslie, I want to wrap up the conversation with you and just talking about, of course, we hear so much when farm bills come to the floor and are getting close to fruition. It's that urban and rural coalition so critical to actually getting those bills passed through Congress and ultimately signed into law. I wonder, what do you think is necessarily the role of the nation's farm groups in maintaining the farm and food coalition that's been so critical to pass farm bills?
I think it's a really important role. You know, prior to my time on the House Agriculture Committee, I was working for the National Corn Growers Association, continuing to keep that coalition strong. And when you look at past farm bills and you look at either new policies, there are programs that were created, or, you know, reforms that were really successful, almost every time that was due to coalitions coming together and really, you know, driving home the importance and the relevance of that new policy reform to a broad swath of diverse members and helping make it relevant to those members. And I think when there were times, you know, historically when that coalition or some of those coalitions weren't as strong, we also saw that play out on the House floor in particular, right? So if passed as prologue, I think every group with an interest in the farm bill has a mandate and to make that coalition really strong and to make sure that they're reaching out to members from all different types of districts and working with partner organizations from all different types of districts.
Very good. Well, this has been just a masterclass and such a great look behind the scenes on the farm bill process. Couldn't be more appreciative of the time the two of you have given us. Leslie and Joel, thanks again. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at how food prices are tracking this year and what that might mean for consumers.
Food price inflation isn't hitting consumers quite as hard this year, but overall cost increases are still higher than usual. This chart shows the mid-year inflation rates for several food categories. This year's rate is represented by the green line, last year's rate is represented by the blue line, and the historical average is represented by the white line. Prices across most of the categories tracked by USDA's Economic Research Service are increasing at lower rates this year than in 2022, when inflation was in the headlines. You can also see prices for some items like eggs, poultry, and dairy products increased a little more than usual. However, prices for other products like meat, fruits, and vegetables have been slower to rise. Expect prices to continue changing. ERS forecasts overall food at home prices will increase by nearly 5% this year. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The next version of the Consumer Price Index will be released Thursday. USDA will release its monthly crop production and world agriculture supply and demand estimates reports on Friday. We'll have the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.